David Brain is assistant professor at the University of Colorado Boulder in the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics at the Department of Astrophysical and Planetary Sciences. He is co-investigator for the Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution MAVEN mission science team. Scientists hope MAVEN, which arrived at the Red Planet September 2014, will explain where all the Martian atmosphere has gone. I'm very excited to be joined here at the Star Spot by Professor David Brain.
Thank you very much for having me.
I want to talk about your work on an exciting new mission to Mars called MAVEN. Let's start here. What does MAVEN stand for?
MAVEN's an acronym, as you might have guessed, and M-A-V-E-N stands for Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution. The E and N and MAVEN come from the first and last letters in evolution. And then the word volatile means any chemical species that likes to exist as a gas. So it's really a mission that's designed to study the atmosphere of Mars.
Okay, so by evolution, that would imply changes to the gas and the atmosphere of Mars?
That's correct. Over long periods of time, over the entire history of the planet. And the planet is, of course, around 4.5 billion years old. And so it's a mission designed to study what might have happened to the Martian atmosphere over the last 4 billion years or so. How has the atmosphere changed?
There have been, of course, a number of Mars missions, some very exciting ones over the last several years or even the last few decades. Is this one the first to really have as its focus looking at the evolution of the atmosphere of Mars?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, because there have been a whole fleet of Mars missions over the past few decades, starting in maybe the late 80s with the Phobos mission. And I'd say almost every mission that's been to Mars has had some measurements or some component of that mission that relates in some way to how the planet has evolved and what the planet is like today and how it got that way, whether water could have flowed on the surface or what past environments were like. The real difference with MAVEN, I think, is that it's a mission that's entirely dedicated to how the atmosphere has changed. And the approach of MAVEN is to study whether atmospheric particles could have escaped the gravity of the planet, escaped away to space over time. It's because we think that that process may have been very effective at Mars, and we don't know a lot about the process that strips atmospheric particles away. So the real difference is that the mission is entirely focused on this one question, rather than having maybe just a component that touches on it.
So the big scientific question here is what accounts for the changes in the composition and the density and things like that of the atmosphere, and what are some of the primary approaches or tools that MAVEN will employ to get at that question?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. So we have 9 science measurements that we're making on board the spacecraft, and I won't go into each one. And actually, we have 10 science measurements. So because we use the spacecraft itself, the spacecraft is orbiting the planet. And as the spacecraft interacts with the very top layers of the atmosphere in its orbit, the spacecraft experiences drag, and we can use that information to teach us about the atmosphere as well. And I'll broadly classify the measurements we're making on MAVEN into 3 categories, but first I have to set the stage just a little bit. The idea is that the Martian atmosphere used to be more substantial long ago. And we think it was more substantial because we see evidence on the surface for liquid water having been present and stable for long periods of time. And that simply can't happen in today's Martian atmosphere. And so we infer that the atmosphere was different long ago, and it was different in a way that made water stable. And so therefore, we think the atmosphere was thicker. There were enough atmospheric particles to keep the pressure and temperature at the surface appropriate for water to exist as a liquid. So from there, you go to the next question. Well, where did this more substantial atmosphere go? We certainly don't see it today. And there are really only 2 answers to that question. Atmospheric particles could go down. They could be incorporated into polar caps or chemically react with rocks at the surface, or even just be absorbed into the surface material and be sitting underneath Mars today. And we certainly think that happened. and their estimates for how much atmosphere could have been pulled out. But MAVEN isn't designed to study this process. Instead, MAVEN is looking at the other way that atmospheric particles can be removed, and that's being stripped away to space. And so if we want to understand those processes, we have to make three measurements to really understand how things work. First of all, we have to measure the particles that are escaping from the planet, but that will give us a very nice measurement, a very nice number, and we can say, okay, today in 2015, this is how many particles are escaping from Mars. But that really doesn't give us the information we need to understand what's happened over 4 billion years. So we also have to understand how the processes operate in the first place. And to do that, we need to make measurements of the atmosphere itself, the top portions of the atmosphere, because that's where the particles are escaping from. And we also have to make measurements of what's causing the particles to escape. And it turns out that that's the sun in many different ways. But the sun is providing energy in the form of sunlight and particles and solar storms. And when that energy interacts with the Martian atmosphere, it drives particles away. So MAVEN is unique in that it's measuring the drivers from the sun. It's measuring this swimming pool of particles in the atmosphere. And it's measuring the particles that are escaping. And by making all of these measurements, we can put them together and start to have a much better understanding of how the atmosphere has evolved over billions of years, and not just in the past several months.
Now, you mentioned that the atmosphere of ancient Mars could have been lost in one of two ways, either down into the surface or up into space, and MAVEN is focused on the latter. Do we have a sense, or does theory suggest, the ratio of how the atmosphere was lost, both up and down, how those rates compare to each other?
I think that there are estimates that get at what you asked, but I don't think we have the answer that you're looking for, that you're asking me for right now. How important were the down processes compared to the up? So what I can say is that we, as a community, I think, accept that atmosphere did escape downward to the surface. For example, Mars is red today, and it's red because oxygen in the ancient atmosphere reacted with the surface, iron at the surface, and those rocks rusted. And so if you look at Mars today in the night sky, you can see kind of a reddish tinge even with your naked eye. And that's evidence right there that some atmospheric particles went down. We also have measurements that there is hydrogen trapped underneath the surface, a fair amount of hydrogen. And an idea there is that water from the Martian surface has been absorbed downward into the subsurface and the crust. So we know that these processes happened. We also have measurements from past spacecraft that particles are escaping from the planet. So we know that escape upward is also happening. And so by measuring the up processes, the particles that are being stripped away, we hope to get a better handle, actually, on the ratio that you were just asking me for. How important were these processes? I'll add one last comment here, and that is we can use the atmosphere itself today to tell us that these up processes may have been important. And we can look at different chemical species floating around in the atmosphere today. And by taking ratios of certain key species, we infer that Mars is missing some particles that should otherwise be there. And the particles that should otherwise be there are light. They're not very massive at all. And so we infer that those particles were taken away to space because light species are easier to strip away from a planet. So just by looking at the atmosphere today, we can infer that as much as 90 or 95% of the ancient atmosphere was stripped away to space through interactions with the sun. But even then, we still have a large amount of uncertainty.
Based on our understanding of those two processes, the up and the down, which change the atmosphere, if we were to extrapolate back in time to ancient Mars, can you explain to me how Mars's original atmosphere would have compared to that of early Earth? So Mars and Earth, when they were first sort of newborn planets, would their atmospheres have been more similar than they are today? They're obviously very different today. Mars is toxic, much thinner atmosphere. But back then, would they have been more similar?
Yes, that's a great point as well. And there, two comments to make here. One is first the composition of the atmosphere. The Martian atmosphere is toxic, as you said. It's 95% carbon dioxide. I would not want to walk around there without my helmet on. And Venus, even though it's a much thicker, much hotter atmosphere than Mars, it is also 95% carbon dioxide, also toxic. And Earth, in between Mars and Venus, is a rocky planet, just like Mars and Venus. Yet Earth has this nitrogen and oxygen atmosphere, about 70 and 20% respectively of nitrogen and oxygen. But it's believed that Earth was once toxic, just like Mars and Venus, that it was once 95% carbon dioxide. But because we have liquid water at our surface, the temperature here is right for water to exist as liquid. That liquid water makes it possible for carbon dioxide in our ancient atmosphere to have reacted with minerals and formed rocks called carbonates. For example, chalk is a type of carbonate. And so our ancient 95% carbon dioxide atmosphere is sitting at the bottom of our oceans today. And if you add up all of the carbonates that we think are sitting at the bottom of the oceans, it turns out to work out pretty well. It's consistent with this idea that Earth, Mars, and Venus all started with the same composition. The second point I'll make is about the temperature of the Martian atmosphere and the pressure. It turns out both are important for allowing water to exist as liquid. And we see dried up riverbeds on the Martian surface, possibly dried up lake beds, all sorts of minerals that form in the presence of liquid water. And this tells us that pressures and temperatures were right for liquid water. So even without looking at the particles that are escaping today, you can use that kind of indirect evidence to estimate how thick the Martian atmosphere should have been. And the estimates range from about half the thickness of Earth's atmosphere today, although that's very difficult to make water liquid at that relatively low pressure, all the way up to 3 or 5 times the thickness of Earth's atmosphere today. And for comparison, the Martian atmosphere today is about 0.5% the thickness of Earth's atmosphere. And so it had to have been much thicker long ago to account for the evidence we see at the surface. So both in terms of composition and in terms of temperature, the atmospheres of planets are changing over long periods of time, which is really fun and interesting to think about.
Now, you've just mentioned the temperature and the climate. Can you explain to me how or what is the relationship between the loss of the atmosphere over time, how that correlates to the changes in the temperature and the climate over time?
Yeah, so especially in an atmosphere that's 95% carbon dioxide, this is strongly correlated to temperature, the amount of carbon dioxide you have. And that's because carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas. It traps heat near the surface of a planet. The planet, just like you and me, is radiating away heat all the time. And these particles in the atmosphere trap that heat and keep it close to the surface, keep temperatures nice and warm. The more carbon dioxide you have in the atmosphere, the better you are able to trap heat and keep the temperature at the surface higher. So, for example, Earth has some greenhouse gases in its atmosphere, and I want to distinguish this from human-caused climate change, but this is sort of billion-year timescale climate change. The amount of greenhouse gas we have in our atmosphere is enough to account for about 30 degrees centigrade of additional warming at the surface. And that's enough to make change our planet from a planet where all water at the surface exists in solid form as ice to water at the surface existing in liquid form. And so the amount of particles you have in an atmosphere relates to how much heat you can trap near the surface, and how much heat you trap near the surface relates to whether water can exist as liquid.
So given that there is this intimate relationship between climate and atmosphere and water content and things of that nature, will MAVEN help us to understand the water content of today's Mars, which is, of course, a big issue for most, if not all, Mars missions? Will we be able to understand, for example, water loss just as we're studying atmosphere loss?
Yes. And so there are two real questions here in the scenario that I've painted. Number one is what happened to the water that must have existed at the Martian surface to create all of this evidence that we see when we look at Mars today? That water must have gone someplace. And then the second question is, what happened to the atmosphere that must have been present in order for that water to exist as liquid? So MAVEN gets at both of these questions. And we'll be able to measure and are measuring different chemical species escaping from the atmosphere. And by measuring those things, we'll be able to understand whether water is escaping from the atmosphere out the top and how much is escaping out the top. But more importantly, we'll also be understanding how much of the entire atmosphere, not just water, is escaping today.
I want to switch gears slightly and now talk about some of the processes in more detail. In answering one of my early questions about the atmosphere loss, you had mentioned that the sun, the solar wind, was partly or largely responsible for that. Can I ask you to elaborate on that? How does that process work exactly?
Yeah, this is actually really fun or interesting, at least for me. And so I'll try and paint it in an exciting way here. There are many different ways in which the sun can cause atmospheric particles to escape, but broadly classified, they can be lumped into two categories. The first category are processes that are driven by sunlight and not the solar wind. So the sun is, of course, emitting light at many different wavelengths, and the atmosphere of the sun, the gas and plasma in the outer layers of the sun, the solar atmosphere. Oh, sorry. Let me go back to light. I was already skipping to solar wind. The light being emitted from the sun and the sun's atmosphere at ultraviolet wavelengths encounters the top parts of the atmospheres of planets and gives it energy. Sometimes it can give particles enough energy to escape the planet directly. Other times it promotes chemical reactions, and those chemical reactions will break particles apart, and the little pieces of former chemical molecules then have enough energy to escape. So there are many different ways that light can make particles escape. The second one, as you said, is the solar wind. And the solar wind is not light coming from the sun, but instead it's particles screaming out of the sun. 400 kilometers per second is really the typical speed. And it's tiny little particles, just protons and electrons, charged particles. And those particles encounter planets as well. At Earth, we have a big magnetic field, a big global magnetic field generated in the interior. And that magnetic field is very strong. And when a charged particle encounters a magnetic field, the charged particle turns. And so, in a sense, the magnetic field of Earth deflects the solar wind. You can think of it as almost as a force field, or I like to call it a salad bar sneeze guard that's sending the solar wind around Earth and preventing it from striking the atmosphere. Mars and also Venus do not have a global magnetic field. They don't have this big magnetic field generated in the interior. They don't have this protective sneeze guard for the solar wind. And so the solar wind particles can go crashing basically into the top parts of the atmosphere. They penetrate much deeper. They deposit their energy directly to atmospheric particles. And so much more so than Earth, the solar wind can cause particles from an atmosphere to escape. This is one reason that atmospheric escape may have been a really important process on Mars in contrast to some other planets.
Now, the sun is, of course, an alive and well star, and throughout its some 5 billion year history or so, it has gone through different phases, and then there's, of course, local changes, the solar cycle, or more temporary changes, I should say, of the solar cycle. How do all of these changes in the sun's activity, both on the very short term and then on that very long term, 5 billion years, how do those affect Mars? Have they played some role in the changes of the Martian atmosphere and climate?
Wow, what a wonderful question, because first of all, it's a really insightful question because the sun is changing on many different timescales. Second, the MAVEN mission acknowledges that the sun changes on timescales, and so our measurements are designed to try and capture these kinds of changes and put them together. So let me paint a picture of a couple of the changes and timescales that are important here. First of all, as you said, solar history. The sun itself that we see in visible light when we look out, into the sky today, that's visible light. And even that has changed over solar system history. The sun is actually maybe 30% brighter today than it was 4 billion years ago. But at the wavelengths that are important for driving escape, ultraviolet wavelengths, that light is generated in the solar atmosphere that I talked about before. And when we look at stars like the sun elsewhere in our galaxy, we can estimate the ages of those stars. And so we can use stars similar to our sun at different points in their history to understand what all these drivers are like. So when we look at these other stars, we see that at ultraviolet wavelengths, young stars are actually much brighter and much more active. And we infer the same thing about the solar wind of young stars. So the processes that are driving escape from Mars today are actually likely to be much calmer, much less efficient, or much less vigorous than they were early in solar system history. So that's a big thing that we have to account for when we're extrapolating. Then there are things like the 11-year solar cycle, as you mentioned, and we see the amount of light and the solar wind from a star varies between solar minimum and solar maximum. There are also variations as the sun rotates on its axis every 28 days. That's solar rotation period variation. And then there are all sorts of short timescale variations that extend all the way to down to short periods such as minutes at a time. And so we're hoping to measure how the atmosphere responds to the changing sun on all of these timescales, which is a really exciting challenge, I think.
So I appreciate you describing my last question as insightful, because the next question is going to be very obvious, but I can't resist the temptation. And that is sort of in sum, if we're looking at all of these things, atmosphere, climate, water, etc., what about life? What will MAVEN be able to bring to the conversation or the debate about whether Mars is habitable, currently has life, once had life? Will it be able to shine light on that big question?
I think so, in an indirect way. And I think that it would be both dangerous and wrong to make a grandiose statement such as MAVEN will reveal whether Mars once had life on its surface. I don't think that's the way.
That would make an excellent.
I think that's biting off more than we can chew. Sorry, go ahead.
I said that's too bad, because that would have made an excellent press release. But sorry, go on.
Yes, yeah, that would be a great press release. But I think here it's a much more cautious approach. But I think it's scientifically very valuable. And I think well, first let me answer the question, and then let me pontificate after that. First of all, MAVEN has picked a small piece of the puzzle. If there was life at the surface of the planet, then conditions had to be right for that life to have existed. MAVEN is indirectly looking at what the conditions were like near the surface. And the environment at the surface, a huge part of that environment for life here on Earth, is the atmosphere and what it was like. Therefore, we need to understand the ancient atmosphere. And we need to understand how that atmosphere was different from how it is today. And the most uncertain part of that question, at least in my mind, is how much escaped out the top of the atmosphere, how much has gone from the planet forever. And so MAVEN has picked this place where we really just have question marks all over the place. And it's going to start filling in the gaps there. So I think of the question of life on a planet like Mars as a jigsaw puzzle. And MAVEN has picked one of the biggest pieces that hasn't yet been filled into that puzzle, and it's going to take that piece and put it in. That doesn't mean the entire puzzle will be solved at that point, but MAVEN, I think, will have done an important job in helping us understand whether life could have existed at the surface of the planet.
Gotcha.
So my follow-on pontification there are two points. One is I think studying planets is intrinsically scientifically interesting, and I love doing it. But I think what drives a lot of us is really a desire to understand Earth and ourselves and how things evolved here on Earth and whether we're alone and things like that. And so I think at the root of a lot of scientific investigation for planetary science anyway is exactly the question that you posed. And so I'm hopeful. The second half here is that I'm hopeful that what we're learning with MAVEN isn't unique to Mars. That what we learn with MAVEN basically teaches us how atmospheres work in general at any planet, and that we can apply some of those lessons to start understanding not just the habitability of Mars, but climate, atmosphere, and even habitability of planets orbiting our star and orbiting stars elsewhere in the galaxy.
We've been talking a lot about, of course, the past of Mars and Mars's present. What about Mars's future? By understanding the trends that have occurred on Mars, will MAVEN be able to help us understand where Mars is going in terms of these questions of atmosphere and climate?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a great point. I think really MAVEN is going to tell us how the gears work, how the process works. If you open up the hood of a car and you understand how the engine works, then you can figure out how it worked in the past and how it might work in the future. And so I think that what we're learning about Mars and can apply over very long time scales, billions of years backward, we can also apply forward to Mars. We can take what we're learning today and extrapolate forward in time, not just for the planet itself, but also taking into account how the sun changes in time. We don't just have measurements of stars like our sun at early points in their lifespan. We also have measurements of stars like our sun at later points in their lifespan than our sun is today, old G-type stars. And so we should have information about what's driving escape, and we should have information about how the gears work. And I think we can combine those to understand where Mars is headed, and in addition, where Earth is headed, where Venus is headed as well.
Right. Professor Brain, I have just one last question for you. MAVEN, my understanding is, it arrived at Mars, it's orbiting Mars, it ended its commissioning phase, and has just started its science phase just a couple of months ago. So how is MAVEN doing?
Oh, it's doing wonderfully, and it's been a thrill to be a part of a spacecraft mission from the very beginning. The missions that I've been involved with in my career to this point, I've come in after the spacecraft was already at its destination. And so to be involved from the beginning has been fun. MAVEN has been doing fabulously at Mars. All the instruments are up and running and working and making measurements. And we're starting to get a lot of interesting measurements. We've been doing science that we've released already, and that we've done enough analysis that we can tell people about it. So, for example, a comet went whizzing by Mars in October right after we arrived. The comet deposited dust from the comet in the atmosphere of Mars. It was basically making a big meteor shower in the atmosphere, and MAVEN was able to measure this happening indirectly. So there are all sorts of things like this that are happening, and it's great to have all 9 or 10 different measurements on one spacecraft at one time, because you don't just get one little piece of the puzzle. When you make measurements with MAVEN, you're able to look at things from many different angles, and it's really been a thrill so far.
Well, I want to congratulate you and the MAVEN team for the excellent work, and I certainly hope to get you back here at the Star Spot to talk about some of the discoveries, the fascinating discoveries that I'm sure are forthcoming. But for now, thank you so much for joining us here at the Star Spot, Professor David Brain.
Well, thanks very much for having me. This was great fun.
Thank you for joining us at the Star Spot, mind and universe continually expanding.
The Star Spot with Justin Trottier is an astronomy and space-themed podcast based out of Toronto, Canada. Please send comments or questions to starspotpodcast@gmail.com. The Star Spot is produced by Ying Zhang Li, marketing and promotions by Natalie Morcos, guest hosting by Denise Fong, news production by Benjamin Jenkins, news contributions from Julia Mazurchuk, Mallory Warren, Jessica Campbell, and Victoria Duncan, web design by Blair Renault, graphics by Carmina Svillens, and I'm your host, Justin Trottier. Thank you for listening.